this is the Fun Kids Bookworms podcast, where you get to find out about the best books from the people who write them. I'm Bex, and this week you're going to hear quite a lot of stuff, actually. We have a spooktacular podcast for you, because Halloween is nearly upon us. We'll be talking to Beck Hill about her brand new creepy, slime-tastic book, Horror Heights. We'll be chatting to Emma Carroll about her legendary, kind of weird book set in the 1960s, and we'll have a reading from a less spooky but equally just as good book, Dermot O'Leary's brand new Toto the Ninja Cat book. But first, let's go back to Beck Hill's brand new series. It's called Horror Heights, and it is a big kind of Goosebumps-esque series set in a world of horror and fear and spooky stories. And the first book, The Slime, is out right now. All right, I am joined right now by comedian and author Beck Hill. Hey, Beck, how you going?
Hey, Bex, the plural of me.
I've never interviewed somebody also called Beck or Bex or Rebecca, and I kind of love it, to be honest, although it may be confusing for the listeners.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm the one with the Australian accent.
I think that'll be a good way of differentiating between the two of us. And of course, I'm not the one who's written a book. You've actually written a book, and congratulations on it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited.
It's such a fun book. I'm not great with horror, as in, like, I do get scared very easily. I read your book and I loved it, but I also was a bit scared, which I guess is what you want. It's called Horror Heights, The Slime. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so Horror Heights is a series. The Slime is the first book, and it's about an 11-year-old girl called Connie who is the queen of slime at school. And then she runs out of slime one day and has to make her own, and adds a couple of her own ingredients, which has quite significant consequences.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin it too much, but the slime isn't what she expected, would we say?
Yeah. Yep. I think that's a good one to go with. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to say things without spoilers here, but I will say the tension you managed to ramp up in the book is quite something. Was it something you were, like, very conscious of making sure, because it's a bit of a spooky series, you wanted to make sure it does freak people out?
Yeah, I would say there's some planning involved. I'm from a TV writing background, so I've written on various CBBS shows and CBBC shows and Disney and Cartoon Network and stuff. And so I'm used to writing sort of short form scripts and stuff like that. And with those, when you're writing a script, you write a thing called a beat sheet, which is where you're sort of doing the story in dot points, in bullet points. Yeah. So if it was Little Red Riding Hood, you'd be like, Little Red Riding Hood needs to take something to her granny. Her granny lives on the other side of the forest. She walks through the forest, meets Wolf. Wolf, you know, you sort of just dot point it. And then once you've got those beats, then you can sort of flesh it out, make it much bigger and make it a really succinct story. And that way you can see that you're hitting those beats, that you're doing what you need to do in order to do things like build tension or introduce new plot points or characters or things like that. And it's very important that each beat sort of have some sort of conflict as well, something that's happening in there. What you don't want is just, you know, they walk, but then nothing happens except walking. You know, you want Little Red Riding Hood walks to her grandpa's. Maybe her grandpa was there, I don't know. She walks to her grandmother's and, you know, she meets the wolf. Whereas if it was just she walks to her grandmother's, that's a bit boring, isn't it?
Oh, you know what, first of all, very interesting, because I've never heard that kind of idea before. Secondly, if our listeners are listening right now thinking, how do I spice up my English homework? That is very helpful, Beck Hill, so thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. I wish I'd known about it when I was in school, actually.
Yeah, that's really useful. And it's worked out so well in this book, because it's a really pacey book. Like, you know, it's a real page turner. And I think that comes also because of the kind of genre. Was horror and, like, spooky stories, was that one of your favourites when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I grew up watching horror films, reading horror books. I mean, obviously, Goosebumps was a huge influence. There was also a bunch of books by an Aussie author called Paul Jennings, which all started with the prefix un. So there was unbelievable and unreal and undone and uncanny, and they're fantastic. And any parents listening might remember Round the Twist made it over
here. Yes, of course.
All of that show was based on Paul Jennings' stories. So yeah, they were all adapted for TV. So I grew up with all weird, spooky stuff, and I really enjoy writing about it. I love hearing people's spooky stories as well. I love every time I'm traveling, I like to ask people, you know, what's happened around here? What's spooky? Surprise me.
Now, Horror Heights, because it's a series, are we going to see Connie again and her friends, or do we travel around the school, or is it stuff that just keeps happening to poor old Connie? What's the deal with the whole series?
Oh, all right. Well, so you will see Connie, but that is because everything that happened in, and this place isn't called Horror Heights in real life. I've called it Horror Heights, you know, to protect everyone's identities.
Mm.
But everything that happens in Horror Heights happened on the same weekend to kids in the same class. So we've had Connie's story, but we're going to be getting the stories from other kids in her class about spooky things that happened to them. And there will be some crossover as well, which is interesting because, you know, we see a scene with a character called Mike, or a person called Mike, in this book, which is a bit sort of short. And in the future, we might get to see that scene again from a different perspective.
Beck, that's blown my mind. That's so good. Because as you just said there, that you would see it from different kids in the classroom. And I just thought, oh my goodness. Yeah, Mike, with the basketball. Was it basketball? He's playing a sports?
Yeah.
And I thought, oh yeah, of course. There might be a reason why he acted like he did. That must take some, this has thrilled me. That must take some real planning to be like, okay, that character's doing this thing. How do they cross over here? What happens here? And of course, it explains now why the book is split up into the weekend, into the days of the week. That's really exciting. How did you come about that idea?
Well, because I've based a lot of the stuff on some stories and things that I came across in real life. So that was sort of that part. And then it was more because I'm obviously fictionalizing it. I've got like a massive cork board, you know, like a pin board. And I listed all the places and the days, and then each kid has a different colored piece of wool, and I've had to sort of pin them out for all of their stories to make sure I don't forget.
And I imagine as well that will mean when all of our listeners see Horror Heights in the bookshops or in libraries, you could pretty much pick up any book. You don't have to read it from the very beginning. You could pick up any book and it would make sense immediately. And then you would like read another one, have like an Easter egg, you could cross over.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. So you can read it in any order that you like. You know, if you could read just one if you want, but if you read all of them, you'll get sort of a bigger picture of what's happening. And we're sort of trying to work out why everything is happening on this weekend to all these people. So one thing that I'd really like to encourage readers to do is to try and find any connections between the stories and anything that might be sort of causing all of this to happen at the same time to these kids.
Oh, and how long do we have to wait for the next book to come out?
The next book will be coming out probably around Easter 2022, so next year. Yeah, so not long. It's a very exciting one. And what I can say is that it involves a kid who desperately wants to be a streamer.
Oh, amazing. Oh, it's so good. Honestly, I really enjoyed the book, and it was a real page turner. And as somebody who I said is easily scared, it was just the perfect pitch for me. It was just, well, so like scary, but not too scary that I didn't want to carry on. Like, it was perfect.
Oh, I'm glad. There's a lot of grossness and silliness in there as well, because I think that life does have a lot of grossness and silliness.
Yeah, you got to go with it. Now, before I let you go, every author who comes to Fun Kids, I do a little quick fire round of questions with them, a kind of this or that game. So first up is super easy. Books or Kindles?
Books.
Yeah, everyone says it. Heroes or villains?
Heroes.
Film adaptation or TV adaptation?
Ooh, it depends on the books. Oh, can I say both? Because there is good versions of both. I mean, I say TV because that was round. I've already mentioned Round the Twist, so let's go with that.
Okay, good. Yeah, good reasoning. I like it. Yeah. Would you rather be slimy or dusty?
Oh, slimy.
By the way, I should say, I don't ask everybody that question. That is specifically for you.
That'd be an amazing coincidence.
What a weird question to ask people. Do you prefer writing or reading?
Writing.
Hogwarts or Narnia?
Narnia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I love me a wardrobe. I'm genuinely sitting in a cupboard right now for this interview because it's good for sound recording.
Just hoping that Aslan will pop out any minute. Just like,
yeah, Berg. Yeah. Mr. Thomas is bringing me some Turkish delight.
Lovely. Laptop or write by hand?
Oh, both. I write by hand every morning. So I do 3 pages of A4 pages every morning when I wake up. And sometimes it is you cannot read it and it doesn't make any sense, or it's just me whining about how tired I am. And other times, I mean, a lot of the Horror Heights stuff has come about from me doing that on the page first. And then, you know, once I'm collecting it all, then I'll type it up. And I do like typing.
Oh, I love that. That's a great answer to that question. A Little Shop of Horror or The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, it's close though. I could feel it in your voice.
It's very close. Yeah. I think Nightmare Before Christmas wins because of the animation, but I don't know. I love puppets.
Such a tricky one. Do you prefer comedy or horror?
Oh, don't make me choose.
I know, right?
Comedy to do, horror to watch.
Oh, lovely answer. Very, very clean. Lovely. Like that a lot. Paddington Bear or Winnie the Pooh?
Paddington.
Yeah, I'd be with you on that. And finally, the big one, salt and vinegar or cheese and onion?
Can I break the rules and say plain? I'm a ready salted guy.
Oh, the hidden third option, is it? All right, I see.
Well, do you know what? People have a go at ready salted, and I think no one ever complains about ready. Like, if you get ready salted, no one's not eating it.
That's a really good point. Yeah, No one's ever said that. I mean, I've had some people say prawn cocktail, which is, I'd say, the opposite to your argument just there. But yeah, you're probably, yeah, I can go with that. I'll give you those plain crisps back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, next time I see you. That. I'll get a packet of plain crisps for you. Well, Beck Hill, thank you so much for chatting to us. We should say Horror Heights, the first book in the series, The Slime, is out now and everybody needs to go and get it. I'm assuming it's in all good and bad bookshops and in like Amazon and in your independents. So they're in shops right now. Thank you so much, Beck, for talking to us. All right, thank you so much to Beck for her brand new book. It is brilliant. Definitely go and check it out. The next person we're going to speak to today is Emma Carroll. Now, you may know her. She is a phenomenally successful writer, and she has a brand new book out called The Week at World's End. Let's find out a little bit more about it. Well, hey, Emma, how you doing?
Hello there, Bex. Nice to see you. Not see you, hear you.
You have got quite a fantastic and really fascinating book. We're going to talk about it in a second. The Week at World's End. How does it feel to have a book out at this time of the world as things are just starting to open back up again?
It's really, really exciting. I mean, this book was supposed to be coming out last year and we held off for obvious reasons. So it's really lovely to be going back out in the world again. Just this last couple of weekends, I've been doing book signings in bookshops again and meeting people, you know, real live people, real live readers. And that has been such a joy.
What you've produced is a brilliant new book called The Week at World's End. And first of all, I think it's fascinating because as you may well know, you are often called the Queen of Historical Fiction, which is a title I adore, by the way. I like the idea that you walk around your house with like a crown, just pretending you are like the Queen of...
Well, I do.
Oh, good. Okay. Oh, good, you do. At least you're living up to it. That's helpful. Good. But you know, writing a book, historical fiction is fascinating, but we think of it as like, you know, kings and queens, Victorians, castles. But you've set your book in the 60s, in 1962, which if parents are listening, yes, I'm afraid it is historical fiction.
It's really funny because I think, you know, when what is historical suddenly appear, you know, becomes part of your childhood, if you like, or your memory of the world. It's like, gosh, am I now history? I must be. The thing that was really lovely about writing this book was that a lot of the inspiration for it came from my parents, who were teenagers in the 60s. So having access to their sort of memories, even for really obvious little kind of day-to-day things like, okay, so what did you earn when you did your paper round? This was a question for my dad. And so what was your school uniform and what did you study in lessons and what did you do at break times and things? It was, they were there and able to tell me and they could remember it all. So that was really helpful in terms of, you know, being able to just sort of build up that everyday world from what they told me. And it's a really fascinating period in history. I mean, you know, I always find this when I start writing books. So I choose a year and I'm like, oh, okay, so let's see what was going on at that time. And you suddenly realise that actually lots was going on. And so this was the year when the Beatles were first, had their first record come out. It was the year that Marilyn Monroe died, the American actress. Most importantly of all, your listeners might want to know, it's the year that Cheese and Onion Crisps came out for the first time.
Wow, that's a good fat Emma. This is, you're on brand. I like it. Thank you.
It's the world sort of as we know it. There's quite a bit of the world that's sort of familiar, you know, people doing paper rounds, people going to school, people, you know, arguing with their brothers and sisters, da, 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 da. But a lot of it that's sort of not familiar as well, that feels quite dated and quite old, like the fact that not everybody had a TV, not everybody had a telephone, not everybody had a car. So there's still that element of sort of, you know, the world's still not quite the modern world that we know of, you know.
Oh, that's cool, because there is so much to it. And, you know, obviously in the book as well, you get to mention pop culture references and, like, you know, people who were famous at the time. It must have been quite fun to be able to mention people who maybe our listeners will have heard of but not know much about.
Yeah, I think it gives you, I think that's the thing about any story really, but yeah, particularly with historical fiction, that you can, you know, mention names that were kind of household names at the time that people nowadays maybe sort of like, yeah, I sort of recognise that, or I sort of recognise that song, because songs are quite important in this story. There's quite a lot of music references. And you know, some of those songs people will know, they'll hear, as soon as they hear them, they'll know, but they might not know who the artist was or what the artist looked like or something. So yeah, so sometimes I think, I mean, I do that when I'm reading books all the time. If I find that something that I sort of know about, but I'm not quite sure about, I'll get my phone out straight away and have a little look on Google and think, oh, who's this then? What is that? Did that really happen? And who? And so it just, I don't know, it's something about reading, isn't there, that makes you sort of discover other things. It takes you off in lots of little directions.
It does mean though that I take ages to read books, like your books, any books in particular, because I'm, oh, I'll just Google that, I'll just double check that, yeah. I'll just find out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in the book you have got Stevie and Ray, we should talk about your main characters there, and they have an interesting discovery. Can you tell us a bit about them?
Yeah, so Stevie is my main character. And she, what can I say about Stevie? Well, the house that Stevie lives in is very much based on my grandparents' house. So again, I'm using quite a lot of my own kind of personal family sort of history. So Stevie lives with her mum and her older sister, Bev. Older sister Bev goes to the grammar school and is very bright and very clever and quite politically aware. Stevie is a bit more of a kind of quiet, very quiet girl who struggles with reading. She's not particularly academic at all, but she's a sharp cookie, and she notices things and she thinks a lot. So I like Stevie because she's sort of not your obvious hero, if you like. You know, she's not particularly popular at school or anything. She struggles to kind of get along with people because she's very shy. Ray is her best mate. Ray lives across the road. Ray has interesting parents. They appear in some of my previous books. So if you've read Letters from the Lighthouse or When We're Warriors, you will know who Ray's parents are. Basically, I wanted my characters to somehow be thinking about previous wars at the same time as they're kind of contemplating this terrifying situation, the Cuban Missile Crisis, which is what the book is set during the week when that happened. So I wanted them at some point to be reflecting on the fact that there had been previous wars and, you know, their parents had lived through those, and they still kind of, they carried their scars, if you like, from those previous sort of conflicts. So so Ray's parents have certainly, you know, as if you've read those other books, you'll know they have had sort of experience, first-hand experience of war and the trauma that comes with that. So I wanted to make that link. And he's a mixed race boy. His dad is an African American GI and his mum is English. And I think, you know, he was quite an interesting character to write as well, because he does face some everyday racism as you know, people in those days did, and people still do. And it's the sort of, you know, the sort of racism that kind of, you know, he's not even aware that's necessarily what it is. And I think, you know, by the end of the book, hopefully, he realises that, yes, he does have a voice and he does have a right to be heard, and he should be taking up as much space as anybody else in the world. And he's a really lovely character. I really liked writing him because he's the sort of boy that I love writing, that sort of very gentle, very clever, very good with people, good at talking to people, clear on his heritage. He's very, very proud of being half American, and, you know, that he's got sort of, you know, a very strong sense of his culture. And I'm smiling when I'm talking about
great.
It because I really liked him.
It's a fascinating time because, like you say, there is so much going on in the world. And I think if you look, if you're now, you know, bringing, like, if you're a kid now, you think, oh, the 60s or whatever, like, yeah, the Beatles, I guess, maybe, but you don't know much about the history. And the Cuban Missile Crisis is massive.
It is a really, really interesting era. Without a doubt, and there's lots there to unpick. But the point of the story is, as well, is that actually, while all this big global stuff is going on, there's kids in the story. Yeah. The kids are at the centre of it. My three friends have their own really big crisis to deal with, and that means an awful lot to them. And they have to do their own kind of, you know, problem solving and sort of diplomacy, if you like, their own kind of, you know, trying to find a way to kind of sort this conflict out. So they're the most important part of all of the story is those three friends and what they're going through.
Yes, because they find very early in the book, this isn't spoiling too much, they find a new friend, shall we say, hiding in a coal shed. And it's figuring out what she's doing and why she's there.
Yeah. Because she's quite mysterious and she doesn't tell them very much because she doesn't want them to know, just in case they get kind of hauled in and quizzed. And, you know, she's quite secretive, but she wants their help. But she's quite an interesting one because she's the rule breaker. She's the kind of the girl who comes along, who shakes everything up for them, because Stevie and Ray are quite conventional, really. They're quite normal. They're quite, you know, they go to school, they do their paper rounds, they do their homework, they follow the rules. They've got these dreams of adventure and things, but they sort of behave and do the right thing. And then Anna comes along, and Anna's sort of like, well, you don't have to, actually. You can, you know, her little phrase is, you know, I'm taking charge of my own destiny. She's one of those people who's sort of like, well, actually, you don't have to follow the rules all the time if you don't want to. And that completely changes, you know, how they behave and what they do. And then at the end, obviously, you know, well, I'm not going to give you any spoilers, but yeah, but she just does make them think slightly differently about the world for a while, which, you know, I think sometimes new friendships do.
Yeah, it's no bad thing at all. I love this book. I love the setting of the book. I love the idea of the 60s as a place to put a book in. Because having read a lot of books that come to fun kids, I can't really recall many, if any, books that are set in the 60s. So you said you're going to have another one. The era was so intriguing to you, you're going to have another one as well?
Yeah. That, I mean, I've got another book that I'm writing first that isn't set in the 60s. Which, yes, so it, but I came across another story the other day and I was like, oh my goodness me, oh dear. And it's always the way, actually, when you've got a book, when you're on a deadline and you've got a book that you're contracted to write and you've settled on an idea, another idea suddenly comes hurtling in.
Oh, man.
And, you know, presents itself, and it's like, yeah, but what about me? And you think, no, get back in line, join the queue. Sometimes it's really hard to settle on, you know, discipline yourself really to kind of write that the book you're meant to be writing, rather than kind of the new shiny idea that comes in and sort of winks at you. But yes, but there is, you know, I think probably the book after the one I'm currently writing will go back there. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant stuff. Well, Emma, thank you so much for telling us all about The Week at World's End. I believe it came out on the 2nd. Is that right?
That's right. Yes, it did. Yeah.
Lovely stuff. So when people go into their real life bookshops now, they can go and grab a copy again in real life. Very exciting. Thank you so much for chatting to us about it.
You're very welcome. It's an absolute pleasure.
Remember, we've got that reading from Dermot O'Leary's brand new book, Toto the Ninja Cat, coming up super soon. But just a little recommendations of a few books that you could check out at the moment. If you're looking for something a bit spooky to fit in with the Halloween theme, why not see Isadora Moon and the Shooting Star? Now, Isadora Moon is a big old series. I've interviewed the author, Harriet Muncaster, a few times, and she's awesome. And in the new book, Isadora is learning all about space. And then one night, she follows a shooting star that falls from the sky, and she discovers a new twinkling friend. I love the Isadora Moon series, and if you love the idea of a character who's half vampire and half fairy, well, this one's for you. We've also got a brand new book called Stunt Boy in the Meantime. Now, this is by Jason Reynolds, and Stunt Boy is the newest superhero in town. Well, he is in his own head, at least. He's trying to save everybody, including you, from all of the baddies around. And it looks like such a fun, exciting, page-turning book. So definitely go and check out Stunt Boy. And third up this week, oh my goodness, you will love this one. If you love How to Train Your Dragon films, then this book series is for you. Because it's How to Train Your Dragon, the big old book adventure series. Find your inner hero just like Hiccup. Now, Hiccup Horrendous Haddock III is a smallish Viking with a longish name. Hiccup's father is chief of the Hairy Hooligan tribe, which means Hiccup is the hope and the heir to the Hairy Hooligan throne. But most of the time, Hiccup feels like a very ordinary boy and finds it kind of hard to be a hero, to be honest. You can discover the hilarious series that inspired the How to Train Your Dragon films in the worldwide best-selling series from friend of the show and awesome writer Cressida Cowell. And it's available right now. If you want to find out any more details, head over to funkidslive.com. Now, before I let you go, we've got to check in with Dermot O'Leary, haven't we? Friend of the show, Dermot, gave us a special exclusive reading of his brand new book in the Toto Ninja Cat series.
Well, last week, my contact up there thinks he might have spotted Felis. Thinks? Well, he's a superstitious old so-and-so. He probably just saw a large domestic cat there. Loads of sightings every year come to nothing. It's mostly domestic cats on their holidays who love the legend and are into the whole wildcat reenactment scene. Quite odd if you ask me, but I feel duty-bound to investigate. So when your brother sank Fluffy Paw's yacht, it gave me the perfect opportunity to send you up there to find out more. I'm going to travel up with the boys tomorrow. Tickets and papers are right here, said Larry, opening his drawer. There are a couple of things I need you to know. One, you're undercover. The last thing we need is the animal press getting hold of this and causing a panic, which brings me to my next point. No ninja moves, guess Toto with a sigh. No ninja moves, said Larry. Sorry, Toto. If anyone at the camp guesses who you are, we'll be rumbled. So I've decided you should use a secret identity for the week. He passed over the tickets and the Braille ID card. Toto moved a pause over the Braille. Tiddles Braithwaite? Hardly sounds like the name of a naughty cat. Oh, you'd be surprised, Larry grinned. Read on. One female owner, Gladys Braithwaite, aged 82, of 14 Winterbottoms Avenue, Croydon, sentenced to a week at Glenview Correctional Camp for... Toto looked up at Larry. Attempting to eat the pet Budgie Petulia? Larry! Everyone hates budgie killers. They're the lowest of the low. That's right. Everyone's scared of them too, so no one's going to mess with you. It's the perfect cover. Oh, I forgot you'll be needing this. He threw a yellow wool coat, a hat, and a pair of glasses at Toto. Lovely! No one will recognise you. You'll make me look like an old lady. Exactly, he exclaimed. Now, get in character. Keep an eye on those troublemaking boys and report back to me if you find anything, which I'm sure you won't. Toto left feeling pretty relaxed about the week ahead, even with a silly outfit to wear. Since the chances of the legend being real were pretty much non-existent, all she had to do was observe and try and keep her brothers and cat face out of trouble. If only it was going to be that easy.
All right, thank you so much to Dermot for that reading. How special did I feel getting a pretty, like, elite reading from actual superstar presenter Dermot O'Leary? Love that. And thank you so much to Beck Hill and Emma Carroll as well for chatting to us about their new books. Remember, there's loads of episodes of Bookworms that you can go back and listen to at any time. If you're after some more suggestions of books that you can read or authors that you can hear about, just scroll back in your podcast app and pick an episode you fancy. I'm Bex, and this has been a podcast from the UK's children's radio station, Fun Kids. You can listen to me on your DAB digital radio, online, on the free Fun Kids mobile app, and on your smart speaker. Just say Play Fun Kids every weekday at 4 p.m. See you then!